nice if it could be so quick to recharge our batteries. Just change the batteries. So tonight's talk, I want to explore a little bit, begin to touch the subject of self and beyond the self. The title is from a small story I will give later on. The title is Bury Me Where You Can Find Me. Bury Me Where You Can Find Me. Okay, and it'll be clear later. So, it's really fundamental to spiritual life that we open the box that we usually feel closed, called me, what I need, who I am, what I must do, the pressure, the stress, the survival, the busyness, ambition, defense, reaction. And the tradition says basically the nirvana is not possible without it, without in some way dissolving this point of view of me that seems to dominate. And it's clear to all of us that it brings a lot of pain. Conflict, war, sense that it's never enough, that our needs are endless. And what's happening now in Ukraine? Where's the benefit? It's selfing, maybe a personal self and a national self or a group self, or it doesn't matter. It's selfing, creating so much pain. Krishnamurti said a beautiful thing. The whole tragedy of human existence lies between the subject and the object. It's a really beautiful statement. So we feel that in our daily life, and we maybe don't look at it as the issue of self, but it is helpful to see it, how much the self actually is defined as friction. Chikuch, that's how the self is defined in the tradition. One against another. Me against the world, trying to survive. So it's this constant struggle with the world. And yet we can't imagine life without it. We can't imagine how I can live without a self running the show. It's the operating system of the computer. It's like if I don't have a self that operates, it's like cancelling Windows on my computer, then it doesn't work. I must throw it in the rubbish bin. So we can't imagine. We can't imagine a thought without a thinker. We can't imagine being hot or cold or angry or needy or falling in love without the me. I am angry, I am sick, I am hot, I am cold, I need this, I don't like this, etc. We can't imagine how that would work without her. So it's really hard for us to kind of picture it. Maybe a few of us have had this experience of kind of some moment, waking up in the morning, and it's a moment where we're not really sure who we are. And then it comes back very quickly. Oh, here we go again. It's Stephen again. Oh, okay. It comes very fast, and it's built very strong. And the image in the tradition is of a king in a castle, but the castle has really thick walls. And the king is sitting in his castle. He doesn't actually know it's a prison. He thinks he's the king of everything, but actually he's in a prison. That's the metaphor. But there is a window. And in the story, the window is high up there on the wall. And in the window can come a little bird. And the bird says, wait a minute, I have two wings. One is mindful awareness, the other one is samadhi, focus, concentration, meditation. And the bird comes and gives the message that, wait a minute, you don't have to feel you're imprisoned inside this. So I want to kind of look at it in two ways, how to kind of approach this solid-looking, total-looking sense of self which we cannot imagine anything outside it. And I think that we can look at it top-down or bottom-up. I want to just suggest that this might be a way that we can kind of eat away at it from top-down or bottom-up. So, top-down. Part of top-down is really to use our wisdom, to use thought, to use reflection, to use insight. Thought is not a problem. It can be our friend just as much as our issue, enemy. To use the powers of reflection and of insight. I have to say that just a few days ago, I happened to see an interview with John Cleese of Monty Python, who was being interviewed. I guess he's sort of my age. And the interviewer asked him, what is your best sketch of that you think? What's the best one? He said, the best one, the one I really, really like, is the one from The Life of Brian. And it's where Jesus stands at the window and there's a great crowd of people and he says, you're all individuals. And they shout back, yes, we're all individuals. And except one person says, I'm not. And someone next to him says, shut up, shut up. You're spoiling the party. So that's beautiful insight coming from top down. It's reflection. It's the humor. We do know something about this absurdity of being such a self. And so sometimes in the Dharma, we get a little bit too busy with the bottom up. But sometimes the top down is really needed to actually challenge the mind. So what is it? What is emptiness here? Where, let's go around it. Let's touch it in different ways. Let's let it sit in us. In the Zen tradition, you ask questions that challenge the self that have no answer. The answer is when the mind is totally exhausted and gives up. And at that point, you know it. So it is something that we can look at. And one simple way of looking at it is to see the thousand selves that we are. We are a kaleidoscope. We're not a... when we just look at it simply... are we the same person as yesterday? As 5 minutes ago? Are we really the same person that walked through the door? Well, you'll say, yes, yes. But wait a minute. Are we really? Are we really the same as when we were 3 years old? Or you can say, well, definitely I'm not the same as 3 years old, but I am the same as I was 3 minutes ago. But yes, everything looks different. I look at myself differently as 3 minutes ago. So am I the same or not the same? So we have many ways of looking at this. And I think there is a spiritual wisdom that we can really help us. But there is a caution in that. Like written on the packet, health warning. One is that we have to be careful of rumination. And in Hebrew, I suppose you'd call it chafira, in the name of thought. That because it can take us in endless loops, and it's the self that's driving those loops. So we are just kind of looping around and we don't really get that far. But we know that because it's unpleasant and painful and has no result. And the second health warning is also from tradition. We shouldn't believe in emptiness. It's really a risk to even talk about it, because it turns into something, the rainbow that, over there that we want. And the whole point is not to see it as another thing. And in the tradition, the images of a snake, when you catch a snake by the tail, it bites you. You have to catch it by the head. So when you have a concept of emptiness or a concept of non-self, it's as if you are catching the snake by the tail. You think you've got something and it stings you, bites you. Nevertheless, we need to ask this question, and that's, as I say, top down. We need to look. What happens when I look at life more from the me point of view? What happens then? What is my longing? What is my yearning for something beyond? What is that? And where is that? And does someone own that too? Is that the self looking for something beyond itself? But it's a beautiful thing. So it's already a whisper of something which is something else. This yearning, this longing. And there's something in us that just says, wait a minute, we've got to be able to jump out of this loop of birth and death, of just me being born and me dying. This can't be. There's something in us that knows that. There's something in us that's bigger than that. A beautiful birthday party for an old friend of mine not long ago, who was 80 years old. And we were all giving blessings. And in the middle of that, he said, I have something to tell you. I'm ready to give to nature what is nature's. I'm ready. Give my body back to where it came from. This body is nature. I'm ready to give it back to where it came from, where it belongs. And it was just such a nice little tick. and a sense that we do know something about this. We do know. We have moments of grace. We have moments of insight. We have moments where we know it's not this. We're not locked in the whole of our life in a kind of cage called me. We do have hints. We do have mystery. Krishnamurti said, beauty is where the self is not. And he was talking about mountains. And I think we all know that. And in looking at it in a radical way, the mystery is huge. And if you ask some spiritual teachers about death, they would say, "Don't ask me about death, I'm already dead." And the Buddha said something the same. The Buddha said, someone asked him, "Where, what will you be after you die? What will you be?" He said, "Well, do you see me now when I'm apparently alive? Do you know what I am now when I'm standing in front of you? So if you don't know what I am now, how can you know what I am when I'm dead?" And that's the title of the talk also, because it's a very sweet little story in a Sufi text that I read now and then. And it was a story about Socrates. And when Socrates was dying, his students said, "Master, you're dying. Where are we going to bury you?" And Socrates said, "Bury me where you can find me." But then he said also what the Buddha said. I couldn't find myself even when I'm alive. So how can I be found when I'm dead? In fact, he said in this story, not one little piece of me could find itself when I'm alive. In other words, there isn't a piece of me that says, itself, me. So in that sense, we're already dead. So it's worth for us in our life, not just for this retreat, but in our whole life, to have this question in the background, and that's the top-down place. To read, to think, to challenge this assumption that I'm a self that is known. And to have it in background in our life as a kind of a interest and a kind of exploration. And we'll go more into that during this week. So what's the bottom up? The bottom up is more what we're doing now in a more direct way. The bottom up is actually using attention and the senses as a truth of things which actually doesn't really need us. So the attention on the bird song, or the attention on the way my foot touches the ground, I'm saying my foot because that's the language, but shall we say the attention on the experience of foot touching the ground, we begin to understand that it doesn't really need a self-ownership of that experience. That gets less relevant. And the bottom up is keeps telling us that our experience doesn't need to be locked into a self-picture or a self-ownership or agency, meaning me doing. It doesn't need it. Who is breathing? We can see it as a kind of question, bottom and top down, or we can just this sort of drop into this breath and feel ourselves breathing or being breathed. And we get a sense that it's, where is this breath? It belongs to the universe. I don't own this breath. I don't own the oxygen. I didn't tell the trees to make me a breath. we can experience it from in the moment as an experience. that there's something universal in this breath, that it would be false to say, I am breathing, it's my breath. Something in there doesn't make sense. And that's very direct. And as we practice, we will notice more worlds opening up when we have less sense of me as the dominant filter, Masanen, the filter, and we begin to notice more. We notice the ants and the insects. We notice maybe the sky and the clouds. We're listening to the birds. Something is opening up through attention in the present, which is bigger than and more connected than the usual lens, adasha, of me. And it's in the senses themselves, because the senses, chushim, senses, are doorways. And what does it mean, a doorway? A doorway is like that window that let in the bird from into the castle of the king. Doorways let in light. Doorways connect us. Doors are open. The senses are what opens us to the world, lets the world in. And through the senses, we join the world. And as much as we can give sensory life, you could say almost eros, we give that importance and interest, and it fills our day, we will find ourselves connected to a bigger place and see things less through the adasha, the lens of me. And it may be not clear, it may be indefinable. You may not understand what I'm talking when I mentioned, like in the walking meditation, to see things a bit more like a pixelim, you know, the small pixels of one step, break it down into elements. Think, well, wait a minute, I don't understand what he's talking about. So it might not. But it is there. It's a sense that if we get more intimate and more close and in touch through the senses, then the whole castle of me, it just becomes, the walls get thinner. There's more doorways. There's more, the windows get bigger. You may know the story of Bahiyasutta, which is quite a nice text about this yogi that was living in the south of India, and he assumed he was an enlightened master, and then one day he had a doubt, so he asked the gods, am I enlightened? And the gods said, definitely not. So he said, so what do I have to do? Go to the north of India. There's a guy there that will sort you out. But it's 3,000 kilometers. But he left and he went rushing to the north of India. And he met the Buddha, who was in the middle of looking for food in the village. And the Buddha said, sorry, I can't see you now. I'm looking for food. And he said, no, it's urgent. It's urgent. So the Buddha said, sorry, but after lunch, that's the time for teachings. No, it has to be now. The Buddha said, no. So he said, it has to be now. So the Buddha said, well, if you ask me three times, I have no choice, but I'll give it to you very short. And he basically said, in the seeing, there is just seeing. In the hearing, just hearing. In the tasting, just tasting. In the touch, just touch. In the smell, just smell. In the memory and thought, just memory. picture. If you are there with the doors of the senses, if you're in the doorways of the senses, there is no self here nor there. There is no place where you are, here or there. And that's awakening. So it's a famous text which emphasizes the way the senses join us to the world, and we can become the world through the doorways to the world, and join the world, merging with the world. Another place that you can say is bottom up, is in awareness itself, is actually to see directly the self arising, to see the operating system. And it's classic, we do it. So something annoys us, we're irritated or we're a bit upset, we have an emotion, it goes round, and we just see the self taking on this loops in the mind, and the self arising because it's got a problem, and the self coming and saying, oh, my back's hurting, this is really difficult, I better go to a doctor, maybe I have corona, I better go, and you know, self gets busy, and we watch that. And we see the way the self works. And that's another place. And it very often it comes with fears as well. So we can be in total bliss and really not feeling a very strong self. And then someone pushes in front of us in the queue to the lunch. And boom, self appears. Big time. How can they do that to me? Watching the self is one very important practice that we can do. Watching the way it arises as an operating system, as a defense system, as a protection system, as a reaction system, and watching that. We see the way we build stories, we see the way we get annoyed with our stories, or we love our stories. We see the narrative self, which is the self, the story self, but we also see a self which is not narrative, which is a basic self. We can actually see it, sense it, the point of subject-object. I am looking at. And knowing that. So again, not to say it's a problem or we shouldn't. We say, my breath. And then we don't need to have a kind of, oh, you mustn't go there because the breath is universal. No, just enjoy the insight into the self, the patterns of ownership. Just to watch that, just be there with it, know it, know the self arising. Because we know it when it arises, then we're not it. Right? If we see the self in any way, we are not it. The seeing isn't it. We see something. Seeing something. So if we see selfing, it's not the self that sees selfing. And we can begin to question the self that way. And that really is bottom up. It's direct experience. It's the thing itself. And we can be a friend of this self. We don't need to see the self as an enemy. It is our friend. It's part of us. It's like I say, the operating system. We need it, otherwise we can't cross the road. I once asked a friend of mine, a Buddhist teacher, how would you translate anatta, non-self? And he said, he thought a good translation was transparency, shakuf, that the self is transparent. We look through it rather than cancelling it. So it's really helpful from in the bottom up, in this sense of direct meeting with the world, it's really helpful to get a sense that things are just happening. It's very fundamental to the practice. It's just happening. This moment is just happening. It doesn't need a label on it saying, I did it. It's just happening. This breath is happening. The digestive system is just happening. The heart is just beating. A thought is just arising. The birds are just singing. Does it need me to be in charge of all of that? A kind of a sense of, it's just happening. And it's really in the practice. I mean, you all know this. And sometimes, of course, we lose it and we forget it. But that, it's a kind of a, it's just happening. Those of you who are in this super powerful retreat called the service retreat that's going on right now, cooking, managing. We talked about it last night. How the doing can be much more a sense of it's just happening. Yes, I'm stirring the food, but how much does that need me to be in charge of that? It's happening. So it's really helpful to kind of have that attitude and that exploration from the moment-by-moment experience in this retreat, which will be in formal meditation, it can be in the walking, it can be in cooking and washing up, it can be in eating, it can be in sleeping and going to sleep and waking up. It doesn't matter. This sense of getting close and intimate to what's arising and what's passing. And gradually, if we keep there, this sense of selfing just gets less important. It just doesn't dominate. It's not needed as much. Experience is a line drawn on water. Kav metzayer al mayim. Experience comes and goes. If we just know that this experience, this moment comes and goes. This moment is just happening by itself. Again and again we see it. This moment, just now. Just in this moment right now. And it's gone. Some of you are moving your body and that stopped. Someone's moving the hand, finger, mind, a thought, and it's gone. Someone's talking words like myself here, and it's gone. It's just all moving, it's all passing, and getting that sense, kind of get softer around this me. So I would invite you all to kind of relax, to be aware of the passing moments, to be aware of what connects us to the world through the senses. Right in the present, in this moment, in the isness of things, the being here now, there is a connectedness which doesn't need the boss, the me. And we can find that in small ways, constantly giving us a sense of freedom. Here I am now with the birds singing. Here is just the breath. Here is just this moment as it is. And the closer, the more intimate we get with that, the more we'll find the joy and freedom. And it doesn't really even need us to think of self or not self. In those places, it's there's the sense of just ease and freedom is just happening by itself, we can say from top down, oh, that may be connected with being less of a self, owning the experience. But we don't need to go there. We can just also say, here is a moment that just feels connected. Connected to body, connected to the world, connected to the sky, connected to the breath, connected to each other, connected to this amazing life. So that's kind of the direction as we look through, as the self becomes more transparent, the world replaces it. And that's why we do this. It's not that we have to kind of attack the self because it's an obstacle. It's as much as the self is more transparent, at that much the world can come in. And we are belonging to the world. The world and us are one. Okay, let's take a moment of quiet.